Well, good evening, everybody. My name is Alan Ingram. I teach in the Department of Geography at University College London, and I'm going to be chairing this discussion this evening. My work is on the artistic, curatorial, and activist engagements with geopolitical situations and events, and my research currently focuses on the 2003 invasion, subsequent occupation of Iraq. Very pleased to be able to welcome you to this discussion on the Al-Mutanabi Street Starts Here project this evening. As many of you will know, the project's title refers to a historic centre of intellectual, cultural and social life in Baghdad, whose history goes back centuries and which is named after the 10th century poet Abu Tayyib al-Mutanabi. On the 5th of March 2007, as violence in occupied Iraq spiralled further out of control, someone detonated a massive bomb on the street, killing three dozen people and injuring around 100. The precise numbers cited in different accounts vary. The market was destroyed, as were surrounding shops and cafes. This event was met by a strong response from Baghdad's cultural community, as poets, filmmakers and photographers defied the bombers and the inherent insecurity of the situation to return to the street, to document the aftermath, to affirm the power of poetry, of writing, and to call for solidarity. The exhibition downstairs and this evening are part of a response to this event that was initiated and energised by Beau Beausoleil, a bookseller and poet from San Francisco, who called for people concerned with writing, poetry, publishing, printing, and the arts internationally to respond to the bombing. The project is based on the idea that bombing a book market targets fundamental shared values of knowledge, learning, culture, literature, public speech, argument, and debate. The project calls for people to recognise the ways in which Al-Mutanabi Street starts here. Beau himself has said that he had a realisation that this would have been his street if he lived in Baghdad. He felt an immediate connection to this place as a bookseller, as a poet, as someone who loves books. So far, the project has involved hundreds of people who have responded to this call, hundreds of individual works of art and of writing and of printing, as well as exhibitions, readings and discussions like this one tonight. There's also a remarkable anthology of writing within the project, which I really recommend that you purchase and read. It's available in the shop, I understand, here. And actually being here this evening, you too become part of this response. I think it's important to emphasise that while the project involves commemoration, it's not just a work of mourning or indeed a work of art, but rather it's an act of affirmation and solidarity that recognises the complexity and the problems of this act. It doesn't deny the need for other forms of assistance in times of conflict, but asserts the specific value and importance of literature, culture and the arts. While its starting point is at a particular event, particular place and time, it isn't fixated on it. If you read the anthology, if you engage with the exhibition, or if you become part of the project, you'll be constantly reminded of ongoing events in Iraq and elsewhere. If you haven't seen the exhibition yet, I recommend that you do. It's remarkable. And it's great that it's happening here at Mosaic Rooms, which I think is an ideal location, and that it's in parallel with this exhibition of Hanus's work. I think they're very complementary. There'll be further events taking place in London and elsewhere in the UK and internationally indeed on the 5th of March, the anniversary of the bombing itself. So please do keep an eye out for announcements in the usual places and come along. Thanks to the Mosaic Rooms for hosting this event. We have four excellent speakers, each of whom will provide a different perspective. So Safai is going to talk about Al-Mutanabi Street itself. Rashad is going to talk about the form of book art. Catherine, who is an artist and coordinator for a new phase of the project, is going to talk about her work. And then Mona, who is an artist and researcher who has contributed to the exhibition downstairs, maybe you've already seen her work, is going to give a talk as well. I'm going to keep things quite concise, both to give you some insights, but also to allow time for discussion. So we're going to have four relatively short presentations by our speakers. Then we'll adopt a panel format and open it up to questions and discussions from all of you. So first I'd like to introduce Dr. Safa Sangour Al-Sali. who's an Iraqi writer, movie critic, and journalist with a special interest in cultural studies and critical discourse analysis. He was editor-in-chief of Al-Adib Al-Muasser, the Iraqi Writers Union's literary magazine in the 1990s. He's worked as a BBC Arabic correspondent in Iraq and Sudan, and he's a former resident of the district in which Al-Mutanabbi Street is located.
Good evening. Really, it's an ordeal for me to talk about a place. I usually called it my lost paradise. I spent more than 4 decades from my life there, and I was there every day from my childhood and teenage and later in this area from Al-Mutanabbi Street to Bab al-Mu'addam, where in between these two streets, really, most of the Iraqi cultural life there and also the Iraqi old city and a lot of Iraqi cultural moment in this time, in this place. So I want to talk about the transformation of this street. If I put it in another phrase, I'm trying to introduce a reading to the memory of the street and its cultural implications. I began when I asked myself a question: can I use metamorphosis to talk about this street in transformation? Because as long as I deal with it as a creature in the process of the life. God helped me to do this task, to try to outline what I want to talk about, these memories and this street. I will outline here 5 topics. First of all, positioning of the street within the cultural history or within the Iraqi history. And we will go to find the root of the street and in different period and in different epochs and in different cultural period also, and political. The second topic is street and modernization, because the street always, the bookshops and Al-Mutanabbi Street, always related to the modernization in Iraq. It tries with the beginning of the modernization in the Iraq, and we will see that when we go to the history of the street. Also, the third topic is the street as a fold, and when we go to the topography of the Baghdad as a city, and also topography, if I so to speak, this word to describe the power relation inside the Baghdad city or inside Iraqi society, we deal with the idea of isolation of or segregation system of the culture from the society itself. So when we find a place for the cultural, it's kind of segregation of the cultural life in one place instead of it diffuse in the whole city. And always I have a metaphor when I live under in the previous period in Iraq under dictatorship. Always I said in Iraq there is 2 kind of system of segregation or isolation. We usually go to out of the city. There is a big institution, we call it Dar Shu'un Al-Thaqafiyya, that means the institution for publishing the book. It's out of the city. It's a very, very nice building with Islamic architecture and with gardens and very, very nice place. And there is another side of the city, another place for mental health, they call it Al-Shamma'iyya. So we have two kind of segregation for the culture and for the mental health people in another side. Yeah. So in the same, I think it's a process, and even the dictatorship and sometimes the power relation inside the society make the segregation inside the society or the cultural life itself. The fourth topic is streets as a cultural bazaar, and that's really a new phenomenon in Iraq after really after 90s during the sanction and during the embargo in Iraq. It's become a phenomenon when most of the intellectual become sailors, some of them, and some of them really become later become active in this way, and totally we have some good poets, some short stories writers, they later transform to booksellers, and they really make benefit from that. So there is a mentality of bazaar or cultural bazaar also in this place. And the fifth topic is the street as a spectacle. I mean, rebuilding the street from the reality itself to symbol, and we have the media effect in that respect. These five topic, the most topic I want to talk about them. If we go to the history, I said the first one, the positioning of the street in the history. I will stop with the six prominent moments. First of all, the birth of Blaze, the Al-Mutanabbi Street, and mainly Al-Sarai before Al-Mutanabbi. There is a small lane before the street. Can we go to the maps, please? So number one, first one. Yeah. I talk about this area from this bridge to the another one, to Al-Mahum. We have really movement during different political era in Iraq from the cultural center. So if we go back, I don't talk about now about a city, but I talk about imagined city for me. And always it's imagined, because the real Baghdad, Abbasid Baghdad, when it's built or established, it's in another side of the river. So this is not Baghdad, the original Baghdad. This is Baghdad later. Before that, they called this area Al-Mahdi military camp. And then during the period of stagnation and the period of invasion, during the Seljuk period, the Turk come in this period, and this area become a center again. So in 1106, we can this area established in a state of, there were a big market here outside of the city. They call it Al-Thalatha, it means Tuesday. Market here, and then there is a new building and a new what can I say, a new class of governors appear in this place. So we have three institution and the school appear in this area. And if I go, sorry, can I say this is the real one? This is the Mutanabbi Street. But the real one is Souq Sarai, and Souq Sarai is not this one. It's here, one of the Mamluk, they call it Mamluk, here, built his palace here, and then became transformed to a school. And beside the school, there's a lane, this lane. Really, it's from here to here, not here. And this, when it becomes school, it appeared, maybe, we don't really know, maybe there is some bookshop appear near this place. And this street, there is no street here, and there is a lady here, also from the Mamluk family. She established this lane, which is the source of the Mutanabbi Street. So that's the original of the place, and it was not for book or for cultural life. There is a transformation for this, and then one of the Mamluk also built a mosque here. They call it Al-Wazir street. Can we see the picture, please, Al Wazir? Still now, until now. Yeah. That's the gate of the mosque. And the lane is behind it, and later become as a market for the people who make the saddles for the horses and the bags. Leather saddles and leather bags in this place. Directly in the front of this door, there is a small lane parallel to Al Sarai. And that's the historical place. When I talk about modernization, this place rebirth again when came Midhat Pasha, he's the governor of Baghdad, in 1896 mainly. I call this moment is the dawn of modernization in Iraq. Midhat Pasha was governor here in Al Danub, they call it in Ottoman system, wilaya. And he later, they bring him to Baghdad, and at that time he became Baghdad governor. For the first time, Midhat Pasha bring the print machine really established the first newspaper in Iraq. They call it Az-Zawra, and related to Az-Zawra, the first bookshop appear in this place. They call it Az-Zawra later, to sell this newspaper and also bring books from Istanbul or from Cairo or from Damascus or from other capital. In the same times, Midhat Pasha, he is really a prominent figure later in reform inside the Ottoman Empire. He become prime minister and he lead most of the the reform inside the Ottoman Empire, and later he have really a very 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 tragic fate. Here we can talk also about not incomplete modernism, because Midhat Pasha, for example, he tried to apply his theoretical thought on the Iraqi society, and he tried to make a transformation toward the capital transformation inside this society. So he, for example, he find the land is a property for the tribe, not for the individual. So he made a law. They call it a tabu. Give the individual their properties, or they can make the land, and really that within corruption system and inside Ottoman Empire, this kind of law, even it's as I said related to modernization, make a big catastrophe later in Iraqi society, because the farmer, the people, the tribemen, they didn't know that they have this art, or there is a law, and the people inside the city, with corrupted system of the Ottoman administration, write the land in their name. So become we have now another problem later become. So that side effect for modernization in this period. The another really the moment, in 1921, the birth of the Iraqi National State under British mandate. There is in this time a lot of bookshop and libraries and open in this place and become a place for the and all, a lot of school also opened in at that time. So. The market or the place is flourished. The another most important moment is in the 50s when we can talk about the cultural prosperity in the Iraqi cultural life. At that time, there is a lot of cultural movement, and there is a lot of and there is really a cultural prosperity. And at that time, in the 50s, Al-Mutanabbi Street appeared. If you go to back to the maps, number one. We move from here. We have about six or five workshops here. First one who move, Maktab al-Asriya. I think it's someone said in the end of the 30s and maybe in the 40s. And later, Al-Muthanna, and later, another. And the street become now stationary and bookshop. And become as a center for the Iraqi cultural life in that period. Really, that's related also to some political transformation inside the Iraqi life. And during the, as I said, Iraqi national state during this period. For example, one of the most important bookshop in this place, Al-Muthanna, it's related to Al-Muthanna Club, which represent the national thought in Iraq. They support it, so there is ideological support for this bookshop to be one of the prominent. Later we have immigration to another places. For example, in the 60s, Al-Mutanabbi Street become something old. Later in the 70s for my generation and the other generation, we go to the another area in Al-Bab al-Sharqi, in the north or south or of this area. There is a lot of libraries and bookshops that give us the new thought and the novels and modern art and different. And so the traditional culture stay there. If you go to find an old book, you go to Al-Mutanabbi. But if you go to find the new culture, as I said, novels and art, and you go to another area, there is another area for the cultural one. And in another period, if you go to number two, map two. Yes. This area during 80s become another culture. And also in the 90s. Here there's some College of the Arts, and there's a library for the college that most of the Iraqi intellectual did there, number Sadat. And also newspaper there, Jumhuriya. And in this lane, in the 90s, during the embargo and sanction, there is a new phenomenon. There is a new book come to Iraq. And the Iraqi intellectual make like special societies or brotherhood in some sense to photocopy the books. And most places for the photocopy of the books, and mainly prohibited book and banned book and different, and most of them, by the way, youth, and most of them our friend, and I'm one of them. We try to exchange our book and then make another culture inside the culture itself. So it appear here in this lane. So later, some people go to the Al-Mutanabbi. At that time, Al-Mutanabbi totally still stationary, and no one go to there. In the 90s, and that's I go to the fifth moment, it's the most important, the repair of the street, now in different way. Most of the, as I said, there is a very, very bad situation inside the Iraqi society. There's embargo, and the most Iraqi people, the Iraqi, he take his salary is about $1 in the month, and his rent may be more than $150. So most of the Iraqi people, they say that we are magician. We take $1 and then we live with we have rent and we have life and we have really most of the Iraqi family during the 70s are wealthy. They have, instead of one TV, four TV. Instead one fridge, four fridge, or three fridge, or two. And they always, in this, Everywhere in Baghdad, you will find on the pavement, on any street, something to sell, just people to exchange it for eating. And at that moment, Al-Mutanabbi Street appeared in his situation. In the previous time, there is no one, there's very little people have make this, sell something on the pavement, because you know, the government sometimes ban that and sometimes take them, arrest them or something like that. At that period, and I call it destruction of the Iraqi state, by the way, in this period, and really it's very, I call it the destruction of the Iraqi society itself. It's worst years of our life, really. And everything later appeared because these 13 years of sanction on... It destroyed the middle class, destroyed the society values, and destroyed, as I said to you, the cultural life, and the most important thing, our vocation toward modernization, our vocation toward the good relation with the world, and we have this intolerance later, and this kind of violence you see it in the end. Really, all the roots belong to this period. So in this period, we have a new phenomena, which the, as I said, most of the Iraqi intellectual bring their libraries from the house and put their books on the pavement of the street and pay just to eat their children. And after 2003. Really, it continued, this one. But within it, there is, as I say to you, for example, as a cultural resistance, I give you an example for the photocopying and what the Iraqi intellectual done at that time. After 2003, this period, I call it normalization of the violence and rebirth of the street as a spectacle. And I don't know, maybe as a safe haven for the intellectual, or as I said in the previous time, as an area for segregation or for isolation them within really blood of the of sea of blood of violence. So always when the media go to Iraq, they go to the Al-Mutanabbi Street and so the people and the intellectual and the life. And the government and the people, they said, oh, we have a life and this is... But around the place, and the culture, when it's shrinkish to one place, instead of diffuse in the different places of the city, and within life of the people, to one place, and in one time, just on Friday, in limited hours, really, as I said, I have a question regarding that. Is it... a safe haven for the intellectual, or is it a spectacle within the media? Anyway, there is a lot of think really. I can talk later about it in discussion. Just one mention to, there is a moment I want to stop with there is a bookshop not in Al-Mutanabbi, but it has very important in the Iraqi intellectual life. It's Mackenzie Bookshop. He's a Scottish man. He's British, and he came to Iraq in I think in before in 20s or before that, and he established a special project. Really organized. We can go to the to the Mackenzie now. Really, this is the place of Mackenzie, and you know it's ruined now. And really, this is the. Rashid Street, which the that's this picture in April last year. April last year.
So look, there is no cars, and this is the place of Mackenzie.
Mackenzie, he agreed with the Iraqi government to build a governmental library, but he make it an independent, not depend on the just he take a deposit from them and then bring it back when he sell the book. And later the government sell them the government library to him and become a personal project. And he stay until that's the remnant of and he stay until the until he pass away in 20s. And later his brother-in-law, I think Donald Mackenzie, he took the bookshop, and really he was one of the people who support the socialist thought in Iraq, and mainly the left side of the political side in Iraq. He have some reference said that he has a very important role in that. So Mackenzie was organized library, and with, as I said to you, with the relation with the world, not in the previous shape of the local library, which already derived from someone who they call it al-warraqin wal-mujalladin ahyanan, who tried to make the leather covers for the, and then he became librarian by the daily work. But here we with organized library or bookshop, and also there is important role for the public libraries, and that's really need another. Sorry for. I think I. Yeah, that's it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Safa, for a really truly wonderful tour through that history, which will be new to a lot of people here, which really draws out the complexity of this place and its significance in Iraqi life, Iraqi nation and state building. And this connection with Mackenzie, this Scott, is really, really fascinating. One of the ways that people working within the Al-Mutanabi Street Starts Here project have tried to connect with the street is through the form of book art. And that's something that Rashad is now going to talk to us about. So just allow me to introduce him briefly. Rashad Salim is a London-based artist and activist who's been at the forefront of contemporary Iraqi art for over 20 years. He's a graduate of Baghdad University and Central St. Martin's College of Art and Design, and he now holds solo and group exhibitions in the Middle East, Europe, and the USA. Speaking personally to me, I like to observe he has a very strong geographical sensibility in his work, and I think that may come through in what he's about to say. Rashad.
But it's very important, the margins. It's extremely important. I think it's the most important thing. You find that in a lot of books, the importance of them, that margin. Okay. How to go. The Mutanabbi Street starts now. It's very specific. Mutanabbi Street. And I'm interested to put give a little bit of context to that, and also a personal view on book art itself, and maybe a little bit of what I'm doing and what I expect to come and see later on. Okay. We know that Mutanabbi Street wasn't a... Where's that? Go back. Mutanabbi Street wasn't an isolated event. Just, I think, a week or two ago, there was a bombing of a private library in Tripoli in Lebanon. Destroyed, and we remember things like going back to the Balkan Wars and the destruction of the Sarajevo archives, and it's a continuous thing. And when we look at Modenbeek Street in Baghdad, I mean, that was one incident of basically what is a second-hand books market. While we also had the destruction of national archives, national libraries, and practically all the libraries that were associated with universities and colleges, etc., so forth. Not to forget the many, many private archives and libraries by people, some of them like Shakir Hassan al-Sa'id, who some of you may know, a wonderful artist. Now that I'm speaking, I should have put those photographs and those images, but I mean, I'll have to speak and see. I'm extemporizing. So Shakir Hassan was one of the people that started the Iraqi contemporary book art. A very important character. So let's put that in mind. It's a general thing, and Modenbeek Street is a very specific, and it's wonderful to see that it's been taken over and become a flagship topic, subject. Hopefully, I hope to point to always refer back to that context, because I'm a little bit afraid of the sort of idolization or objectification or whatever. I don't know what the academics speak of that would be, but of books and stuff like that, or a place or an event in itself. It's continuous. It's been happening, though from my last visit, it doesn't seem to be happening as directly anymore. On the contrary, there seems to be a big growth of it. You can see that sort of this sort of the making of the books as an object. One of the earlier works by Muhammad Sa'adun at the time. Even the exhibition that we did in Holland in 2007 at Gemak in Den Haag also focused on in one of the events on Shahbender Cafe, which was a cafe that had the biggest loss of people. The idea of this street, which continued and on. But let's also look at what's being done with the books and the wonderful examples that we have in this exhibition. And there's a whole tradition of book art that goes way back. And what the definition of that book. As you know, Iraq was one of the first places that had writing. And I would extend the definition of the book to things like the cylinder seal. Where's the cylinder seal? There it is. It's a three-dimensional book. I mean, we're just now getting into three-dimensional printing. It is 3,000, 4,000 BC, of three-dimensional printing. And every picture, of course, may be worth 1,000 words. So you have all sorts of things like stories. And we have some contemporary artists, like the artist Meysenoun Farage, who is a ceramist, using that sort of printing technique, because, again, printing, book form, in her art. Amazing things that you find. So there's the book as a form, and there's also the book as content that I'm interested in. What is the content of that book? How do we access or use that content or reuse that content as we see now? Another one of Meysenoun Farage's works in the British Museum is a ceramic book. Two pages. Again with that. And these works are pretty much all pretty much after the event of that. It's ongoing. Another sort of bit of context for the Arab-Iraqi book art movement. This is a work of Atil Adnan, a Lebanese artist who is one of the pioneers of book art in the Arab world, and a poet making it. And one of the people that the Iraqi sort of promoter of book art was, I think, influenced by the Azawi. The Azawi is lived in London for quite a while and was very influenced by the kind of book art exhibitions that were being taken. I think it was in the Barbican that they have a yearly book art, I believe. But it was I remember hearing about it from them, and it is the Azawi that has been promoting amongst the Iraqi artists very much the book art as a form of art. Another of the Azawi's work, and this is sort of something that has to do with the idea of content, because Azawi fragmented, if you wish, the elements of Arab culture and reorganized it in an aesthetic compositional form. It's not so much the meaning as the shape, the beauty, this, that. You know? And a book from, I think I was mentioned by from the Abbasid period, you know, the El-Wasati, a book art illustrated from the Abbasid time that has significant influence on Iraqi art sensibilities. And again, content of the book. Here's a book art by Karim Rissin, and I think one of the most successful, and for my tastes, one of the artists whose books move me in all its aspects, as shape, form, aesthetics, and content. Over here, the book is about uranium, the depleted uranium, and it is really a pleasure to, not a pleasure, it's a bad word, but it raises one's spirit to see institutions like the British Museum, who've been very influential in supporting Arab art, Iraqi art, and book art, who showed this book at their Word into Art exhibition, which was a seminal exhibition, dealt again with books. The other art is also in the book Word into Art exhibition. But here an artist using the format of a traditional tablet. You know, we didn't. Quite a few of the Arabs all over didn't. I think it was pretty quite ecologically sound. They didn't sort of have enough trees to sort of make that many books and papers. So it's tablets, which is also a book that used to be written on and then erased. This sort of interactions I find interesting and a source of inspiration. And I also find libraries of any sort, compilations of books, inspirational. We all, each and every single one of us, has a bookshelf. And I'm promoting the idea that that bookshelf is book art. Over here, this is a private a book library of Meir Askari that we made an exhibition, and I used the work that I had commissioned from a very good artist, Nadim Kufi. We worked together to make these broken houses with a mixture of clays inside and between. So it's the details when you go into it and you read those titles that is part of that book art in the sense. Another work that I've been involved with, was my work, is the pianos, and they each have a set of books. Rather than engaging with the book as a material, I'm interested to see how those titles engage together. You know, how the books themselves is an art form. I would really want to see how to get to the content, the use of these things. The piece is called Conversation Piece. Content, yeah. It's amazing, the thing, especially because you have to think that Iraq has lost many, many, many things, including traditional arts, traditional crafts, ways of engaging with the land and the material that is in the land that was continuous since the beginning of history that has been lost. How do we find them? How do we return them? How do we even know of them? It's books, you know, and one of the tasks we have is go back to these books, to find these books, and to try to bring those books on the contents of these books to bear on the future that we may be designing now. I've just come back from a trip to Iraq, and it's been very difficult, and it's difficult for all of us Iraqis, especially in the activist, anti-war, anti-this thing, to re-engage. And here's another connection I find between these ideas that I'm trying to get across and books. It's a book that you hold and you engage, and you go to a place like any place, really, geography, and it's, in a way, you're reading everything. It's your book that you open and you read. So I just came back from a trip down the river. I haven't put any photographs of it. And just going down that river, it's like going through this unbelievable book where things are coming out and being narrated all along. This is something that has disappeared completely. These are now here. Watermills that are out in the river feeding the irrigation. And the other one, this picture, is from Sana'a, Yemen. And I've given to manuscripts. The story from there, there's a little story, it's just going to be short. The central mosque in Sana'a. Not central mosque in Sana'a, because the imam had banned books completely. And there was a sort of practically like a 1001 night story, a gathering of all the books, and they disappeared. In the, I think it was the late 70s, suddenly the rafters of the Grand Mosque of Sana'a exploded. They opened up and books, literally like engulfed Sana'a. People were going around with wheelbarrows collecting these manuscripts. And there was a German, Austrian, funded manuscripts study department that was set up to look at these things. So I found some manuscripts and took it to them and said, you know, what is this and can I use this? And they said, well, that's just 300 years old, that's 500 years old. It's beautiful, but, you know, this is the sort of thing that any student would have had. Lexicons, you know, art, wishy-washy. I've used that in my art. And also other artists like Hanna Malala has been using each one of that, the page from a manuscript of a book, a painting, a book, a painting, an object. And it's interesting sort of use. I was hoping that that little bit would be in one of the things that I could say, and it's also here. So that explosion of books in Sana'a, it's all reached all over here, you know. to end this, and I think I might have been even under time now. The last 13 minutes, I'm 3 minutes over time. Okay. The last picture is the proposition of... Actually, it's not proposition. They're going to build it, the new Baghdad Public Library by AMBS, who's actually the husband of Mason and Farage, is the designer architect of this. I'm really looking forward to one day, inshallah, gathering all these books that have been done about Mutanebbi and other places where it can be somewhere truly you can see it and hopefully inspire generations to open up and read the books again.
Well, thanks very much, Rashad, for another fantastic talk that you know, invites us to make a whole lot of new connections. So now we're going to hear a bit more about some work that's been going on within the framework of the project itself and how that's developing and moving forward with Catherine. So Catherine Cartwright is a printmaker, and she's the UK coordinator for Absence and Presence, the latest phase in the Al-Mutanabbi Street Coalition's work, and a coordinator for a printmaking response to the bombing. She's director for the Double Elephant Print Workshop and is currently artist in residence at a women and children's refuge.
Thank you very much, everyone, for welcoming here today. I'm Catherine Cartwright. I'm the UK coordinator for a new phase of work that's right in the very beginning stages, that's involving new artists to respond to the bombing of Al-Mutanabbi Street on the 5th of March 2007. So downstairs, you'll have seen the beautiful exhibit of the artist's books and the broadsides. The broadsides were the first phase of response through from 2007 to kind of 2009 from letterpress artists, both primarily, first of all, from the States and then through through the UK and beyond. And the artist books were created by 260 artists from 2010 through to kind of 2012. And so what you see downstairs is just a fraction of the work that's been created by almost sort of 500 artists who've contributed. And but you've got very special pieces downstairs which resonate a great deal. So a new phase to this response is through printmaking. And I'm the UK coordinator. It has a theme of absence and presence. There's other coordinators too. There's four in the States and one in Australia, for Australia and New Zealand. Bobo Soleil, who's the founder of the project, the guy with the really clear vision and driving force, is still looking for coordinators in other parts of the world, particularly, obviously, Middle East and Africa. So we're right at the start. There's about 130 artists so far who have signed up, for want of a better word, to make prints in response, and about 37 of those are based in the UK and Europe. So it's ongoing, and so for seeing that work that's created, if you kind of look ahead to 2015, 2016, so you can see that this response to the bombing of Anne Watanabe Street has this ongoing momentum that continues to draw in people who feel compelled to respond. Only we don't force anyone. There's a lot of space around invitations that are given to artists to respond, in that it's imperative that it's something that they want to do as part of their practice, that it maybe relates to their practice. It might be something they've never thought about before, but, for example, I've approached them because I've seen something in their work that makes me feel that it could be something that they're interested in. The images that are showing right now are from Double Elephant Print Workshop in Exeter, where I'm one of seven directors there. And so I don't know how many of you are printmakers per se, but there's one here. Great. But printmaking, as printmakers, you work in a communal space, in a communal workshop. You work alongside other people. You share equipment. You share ideas. You support each other. I mean, I'm a printmaker. I haven't done a degree in printmaking. I've learned it all in the workshop through short courses from other people. People are very generous with their time. And so I just wanted to show you some little glimpses. These are the tools of the trade. Printmaking, it covers a huge variety of mark making and forms. It's got huge potential. I mean, as we've heard just now, looking at book art and the cylinder seals as a form of book art, equally a form of printing. You've got the methods that you will have heard of or come across, from lithography to etching, dry point, collagraph, monoprint, monotype drawing, digital prints, photo etching. It goes on. And then that's not to say all the methods that people just invent, you know, because you own your own processes. And there's plenty of those. And I'm sure they've got their own names, but I don't know what they are. So why printmaking? So we've had the letterpress response. That is a form of printmaking that's it's relief-based. So all the ink is sitting on the surface of the paper that you see downstairs, and it's text, tends to be text-based. So as I've just said, about printmaking can come with all of those different processes that ink will sink and work on the paper in so many different ways, depending on the viscosity, the thickness, and so on. And that just gives such great potential for such a range of creative responses that is really suitable, pertinent to a project such as this that has so many layers of meaning and depth and possible ways of reflecting, examining, interpreting, and so on. So when an artist accepts an invitation, or they have a year, that's what the artist who created the artist books had. They had a year to create. Obviously, printmaking's great because it's still multiples. So they will gift us 5 prints from a bigger edition. Those 5 prints can then be in different places at the same time. So this project is about creating dialogue about events like today. Each year that has since, for the past 4 or 5 years, there's been maybe 8 or 9 different venues around the world where these exhibitions are happening. And these events like tonight are happening and dialogue is happening. So print is integral to that happening. Obviously, it's how it was born as well. I just want to say something that Bobo Soleil, who's the founder of the project, has said in an email I got the other day. He said, "I want our project printmakers to struggle with the ideas of this project. I want them to discard what comes easy based on what they've already done. I want a new direction of thought manifested in their print. There needs to be sharp edges in these prints that catch hold of memory and breath. So it's not a repeating of things that have gone before. I don't know what will come out of it, but it is a new phase and a new kind of examination of everything that we've been talking about tonight. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Catherine. Now we're going to hear from one of the artists whose work is part of the exhibition downstairs. Mona Kriegler is a researcher in art and politics with a focus on political writing through poetic frameworks. Her doctoral project is based on dialogue with artists from Iraq and Iraqi Kurdistan, investigating absence and unfreedom while negotiating the plural conditions and contexts of the research, making and display of contemporary visual art practices. So I'd like to welcome Mona. I'm going to switch over to her slides.
Yeah, thank you all for coming and thanks for having me. I will start by saying that in the beginning I found it quite difficult to find a connection between the here and there, between me and Montanabi Street, because I've never been there. To make matters worse, one of the first pages I stitched, I didn't realize that I stitched over the river rather than the street. And first I was shocked, and then I thought, actually, it doesn't not only relate to imperfection, it also, most importantly, talks about unfamiliarity with a place. And so that happens if you don't know a place, you can't locate a street on a map. So I was interested in how to bridge this gap. Who is this project for? Who sees it? Who hears about it? Who might be excluded? And what audience are we talking about? As a researcher and in the beginning of my doctoral project, I fought many battles with myself, asking who am I as an outsider to speak of a culture I don't belong to, and at that time also a language I didn't speak at all. Now I speak a little bit. And so a research question I always have, despite my general research interest, is research invasion, betrayal, or is it mediation? And if it is mediation, what happens to the question of autonomy in the relationship between mediator and mediated? I'm not a book artist, and I didn't really produce a book, probably fragments of a book, which consist of single pages, and something else, which is an installation consisting of a framed artwork and a wooden box, which was kindly given to me by Rashad, and also a video and a photo album. As a researcher writing about art, at some point I felt the need to basically go through the process of making to gain a crucial insight into the artistic making itself. But the process as progress, in a way, was a very capturing thing. What I thought, can I do from Watanabe Street, far away and from within a very safe place where we usually hear about other tragedies but don't experience them necessarily. And all I could think of at that in this context was this idea of brokenness. When things break, what do you do? Brokenness to me meant inclusion and integrity. It was a connection between us all. And it was, to me, a connection, the first connection between the here and the there. It inspired me, and also relates, brokenness related to the Japanese aesthetics called wabi-sabi, and it's a particular concept which is called kintsukuroi, the art to repair with gold. And I will read a little excerpt from the text, which is also in the exhibition. And it says, in some East Asian cultures, broken pieces of porcelain or ceramics are put back together again as a way of emphasizing their brokenness. The artist traces the cracked lines with golden paint, highlighting the randomness of the pieces, which then become the artist's guide. And that is wabi-sabi. So I moved from object to subject, and I decided to transfer or transcribe this idea to the human body. And I asked people in my local environment, where are you broken? I had to start here because this is what I knew, even though it was still far away from Watanabe Street. So several photo shoots, interviews, voice recordings, notes, emails, conversations followed. And while I was listening, I found out that each narrative of pain embodies memory, and that brokenness inherits manifold meanings, interconnecting the physical, the psychological, and the emotional. Then sketches followed. I don't know if... Well, you've seen some of the sketches. So sketches and drawings of maps of Baghdad and Watanabe Street followed. And I quote from the text again, the brokenness of the human body mirrors Al-Mutanabi Street. We can imagine the street as a scar and the city as a wounded body. To highlight the brokenness of the street and its people and the loss of its books, every page is stitched by hand with golden thread, crafting the outline of the scar that is Al-Mutanabi Street. The act of stitching does not only admit irreplaceable loss, but suggests a transition from different states of pain to an everlasting memory. It also relates to medical suture. The act of stitching is necessary so the process of healing is allowed to take place. A further aspect was the collaborative nature of the project, the exchange and the importance of sharing, which almost became a project in its own right. So there was the one who filmed, who edited, who translated, who designed, who wrote, who filmed, who framed, who engraved, who drew, who stitched, who printed, who listened, and at the end, who participated. And there was one filmmaker as a participant, and she brought someone who filmed us while she was filming me painting her broken body part. And so it was... projects within projects emerged, and this was fascinating to observe how multiple the process became and the documentation of it. Everybody involved, around 40 people from all around the world, based in London, all of a sudden knew where Watanabe Street was, what it was, and what happened to the street. And that's where it started to make a little more sense, getting a bit closer to Mutanabe Street, because it raised awareness, firstly. And secondly, there was another realization. Once we know, we are responsible. How do we deal with this responsibility, and how to deal with the difficult and inconvenient truth? I started writing the text, which became as important as the collaboration and the project itself, the process of writing and rewriting and translating and retranslating. And this is when I met Safa, who kindly agreed to translate my text into the Arabic language. And then we met again, and after he was reading the text and working on it, he said, "Have you ever heard about the Khayat al-Fafuri?" I did not, but it seemed important. And this meant that knowledge was absent to me. And what happens when knowledge is absent? Is responsibility absolved? Let's go back. Who is the Khayat al-Fafuri? And I quote from the text. In Iraq, the Khayat al-Fafuri once came to villages and towns to repair broken objects, from glasses to teapots, plates, and leather goods. He did not only stitch, but also used a metal coating to give the object stability and a new form. Both traditions, the Khayat al-Fafuri and the concept of wabi-sabi, capture that what was once broken is now fragmented and whole at the same time. This recaptured existence is the breath of new life for the object and the subject, suggesting a metaphor for the fragility of our lives and the pain within us, and also the life of books. This is where the project started to make more sense, because Safa for me meant the bridge between me and here and Mutanabe Street and there. And I spent a lot of time listening to Rashad and Safa and other Iraqis, which then led to the collaboration for this project. When things made even more sense, that was a moment when Safa traveled to Baghdad, because Baghdad was the cultural capital of the Arab world in 2013, and gave a lecture. And he told people about this idea, his friends from Mutanabe Street, people he met. And it was not me who traveled there, but it was the idea that arrived. And it was this idea of the idea of the traveling concept. Yeah, the idea was actually traveling. And so that, to me, meant bridging this gap which was missing in the beginning. And it somehow it meant that it reached some of the people and the place it has been made from, in a way. And it suffered to me, was the messenger between here and there. And to finish, I basically just want to say that the work you see in the exhibition is a work in progress. It's as the idea of the whole project, it's imperfect and incomplete. And we are right now collaboratively working on new ways of developing this project. One is to ask the people of Mutanabe Street and in Iraq, where are you broken? Though reaching out to Iraq has proven to be very difficult for me in times of, let's say, continuous and very tragic brokenness. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.